We're going to discuss the Seder of Mishpatim, this coming week's Seder. There's a question as to what exactly the place of this Seder is in the chronology and the context of the Book of Redemption. We've had from Shmos, spoke about the slavery in Egypt, Vo'era, the 10 plagues, Bo, the final plagues, and the Exodus itself, Bishalach, basically the splitting of the Red Sea, and the beginning of their sojourn in the desert with the Mon and the Be'er, and the war with Amalek. And then last week's Sedra, Yisrael, the giving of the Torah, the end of the book of Shmos, which is really the book of redemption, needs explanation. Why are the Sedras starting next week of Truma, Tetzave, Kisisa, Vayakel, Pekude, which predominantly deal with the building of the Mishkan, of the tabernacle, why are they in the book of Exodus? They should be the beginning of the book of Leviticus, of Vayikra, which speaks about sacrifices and all the laws of the Kohanim. So first you have to build a Mishkan before you can have sacrifices. So it should have been the beginning of the next book. Shouldn't have been in the book of redemption. So that, the Ramban says, that the redemption was not complete until the Jewish people realized their full potential, which had been repressed by the exile. And that's what redemption is. Redemption is realizing your full potential. And their full potential is to go back to the status of our forefathers, whose God's presence rested on their tents. So until we went back to that status of having God's presence reside with us, we weren't really fully redeemed. So that explains why those sedras are in the book of Exodus. But why this week's Seder, Mishpatim? Mishpatim basically deals with civil law. Most of it, good portion of it, is civil law. These civil laws could have been put nicely in Mishneh Torah, in Devarim, where there's a lot of laws similar to this that are mentioned, or in Sefer Vayikra and Kedoshim, where also a whole compendium of mitzvahs is mentioned. Mention these there too. Why is this specifically in the book of Exodus after the Ten Commandments? So there are many answers to that, but the Ramban says one very simple answer, and that's the one that I want to elaborate on. He says that the last of the ten utterances, they're not really Ten Commandments because there's a lot more than Ten Commandments there, but they're the ten words, the ten utterances. The last of them is Lo Sachmod. Don't covet. Don't be jealous of someone else. In order to know what's yours that you can want and what's somebody else's that you're not allowed to covet, so you have to know what's yours and what's not yours. In order to know that, you have to know civil law. You have to know what you have a right to and what other people have rights to. And that's why the first thing is that you have to go to a Jewish court. These are the civil laws that you put before them. Them and not non-Jewish courts. Or not even a Jewish court if it's secular. It doesn't run according to Torah law. It's prohibited to go to a Jewish secular court, Israeli court, because they don't function according to halacha. The reason being, anything that you're awarded in such a court, if it doesn't comply with halacha, is not yours. And therefore, you're basically stealing. So in order to know what is yours and what's not yours, so you can fulfill the mitzvah of not coveting that which is not yours, the Torah had to go into whole detail of the parsha of Mishpatim to tell you what's yours and what's not yours. It's basically an enhancement of the last of the 10 utterances, don't covet. That's what the Ramban says. What is exactly this prohibition? So the Ramban says, later on in the second time that the Torah speaks about the 10 utterances, the Aseres HaDibros, it mentions also Lo Sisada, don't desire. Not only don't covet, don't desire. And one of them is in the heart, where you make the plans to a strategy for getting something that belongs to somebody else that he doesn't want to sell or doesn't want to give up. And you're going to find a strategy how to pressure him to give it to you. Actually carrying it through and pressuring the person until he sells it to you or gives it to you, that's the prohibition of losachmot. So losachmot includes wanting it, having a strategy, how you're going to get it, and putting it into practice. Now, what is the idea behind this prohibition? One idea is that a person has to recognize what his portion in life is and know that God is the one who apportions out to each and every individual what they're supposed to have as means to serve God. Our job in this world is to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam, not to enjoy this world in the physical material things. Physical material things are means to reach an end. They are utensils. They are tools to be used in service of God, just like a person's body. The purpose is not that the body is an end in itself, and one therefore should satisfy his body. One has to use his body towards a spiritual purpose, which is the world to come. So you're put into physical world. The physical world is a means to reach an end. It's not an end in itself. And it's like a play. Everybody has their part. And if you do your part well, in this world, you create your world to come. So what you do in this world is infinitely and eternally significant, vis-a-vis that it creates the world to come. But if you only see it as satisfying yourself in this world, then it's a very unimportant, very short-lived life. Life is almost unimportant and basically a long death. You're born, you begin to die. And anything that you accomplish is short-lived. So life is important because it is a means to reach eternity. And then everything you do in this world has eternal significance. In any case, therefore, a person has to look at his body as a costume. You're given, your soul comes into this world, and its purpose is to function properly in this world and fulfill its purpose, its part. Everybody has a part. Nobody does the whole thing. And God is the one who determines the part. What act you're supposed to come in on, what part of the stage, what part you play. For the part, you need a costume. You get a body that fits your part. You get material possessions that fit your part. Those are your props. You're given an act to function in, time and history, a place on the stage to be. That's where you're born, where you live, where you move to, whatever it may be. All those are definitions and parameters of your part in being able to create your specific world to come. And God is the one who decides what you need for your part. He knows what your neshama is like. So that's the basis of not coveting what somebody else has. It's not my part. If you have a part in a play, and you're the queen, and you have a scepter, but somebody else is the court jester, and they have 10 props, you're not going to covet their 10 props. To be the queen, you don't need those 10 props. You just need a scepter. You have one royal gown. The court jester has 10 different changes of clothing. You're not going to covet him. It has nothing to do with you. It's not your part. that the Ibn Ezra says that how can one protect himself from being transgressing this prohibition? It's like a natural feeling. You see something somebody has, you like it, you want it. How can you guard yourself not to do it? She says, basically, if you have the right philosophy on might, you won't come to covet somebody else's thing. He explains that people only covet what they feel is within their realm. But if it's not in their realm, then there's no coveting. I'll update his example. You have a doctor and a shoemaker who are neighbors. And the doctor gets a new ultrasound machine, and the shoemaker gets a new sewing machine. The doctor is not going to covet the shoemaker's sewing machine. Doesn't need it. It's not his realm. The shoemaker is not going to covet the doctor's ultrasound machine. But let another doctor get a better ultrasound machine, or a better shoemaker get a better sewing machine, the shoemaker will covet the shoemaker and the doctor, because they feel that's their realm. If you condition yourself to feel that whatever you're given in this world, that's your realm, that's what you need to fulfill your part, and what somebody else is given is for them to fulfill their part, and you won't covet anybody. I don't need what they have because they have a part and I have a different part. So what I want, what I like, it's not for me. If you can condition yourself with that philosophy, says the Ibn Ezra, you won't come to have the initial desire. Yeah.
But can you still sell them to want those things you'd like?
Yeah. As long as it's not that you coerce somebody else to take it away from them, but that you see something that you think you could use in your Avodas Hashem. And you dive into the Rabban Hashem, I think that this would be positive for me. Right? Yeah? Then you can dive for that, for sure. The Mesiras Yesharim says that therefore this prohibition is a function of Sameach Bechelko. Literally being happy with your lot, with your part. Okay? And again, you can daven that your part change. Because as you change, your lot changes, your part changes. And what's good for you changes. Just like you can daven to get better if you're sick. True, it's your lot to be sick. But if you daven, maybe you won't need to be sick. You can be healthy, and that'll become your lot. Because then you'll be able to function better, healthy. And now, you're on a level where you need to function better when you're sick. And God said that that's what you need. If you'll change and you'll improve or whatever it may be, then maybe the kalim, the tools, the utensils will change also. And that's why it says, Rekev atzamos kina, Pasuk in Mishlei, that jealousy rots your bones. Now that can be understood literally, that when you're jealous of somebody, it eats you up alive. But there's a deeper meaning. And the Gemara says on this sentence, what you have, what you want, you won't get, and what you have, you're going to be taken away from you. Now, that's not a punishment. That's a natural result of jealousy. What is jealousy? Jealousy is, I'm not happy being me. I think that I need what someone else has to be able to be successful, to be able to be fortunate. I'm not happy with my part. I want somebody else's part. I don't realize that God is the one who apportions out the parameters within which I can function best and fulfill my part. So therefore, if I want somebody else's part, I'm not going to get it. You can't be somebody else. At the same time, what you have, your part, your tools, you're going to lose because you're going to atrophy. You're not going to focus in. You're not going to enhance them. You're not going to use them. And therefore, you're going to lose them. So you're not only not going to get somebody else's props, you're going to lose your own. You're not going to be using them properly. So that's one aspect of Lo Sachmod, the concept of recognizing that God apportions out roles in this world and gives each person what he needs to fulfill his role. The second aspect that the Sfarim say, the Mesilas Yesharim also says, that when a person busies himself constantly of seeing physical, material things that other people have, and that's what he's trying to figure out ways of pressuring and getting it or whatever, he becomes a very materialistic, very gashmiistic a person. And he then loses his love for Hashem, because the love for things that he doesn't have overwhelms him. And he becomes very materialistic. And that's what his whole life becomes, running after materialistic things that he doesn't have, instead of being happy and satisfied with what he does have. And therefore, that's why the first mishpat, aside from having to know what's yours and what's not yours, that you shouldn't go to a non-Jewish court that may award you with things that don't belong to you, that you don't really deserve according to halacha. But the first civil law that's discussed is the parsha of Eved Ivri. A person who either stole and was sold as a slave because he didn't have money to pay back, or he sold himself as a slave. The idea being that since the whole idea that the Ramban says that this parsha comes to enlarge, enhance, continue on with the idea of not coveting, and we said the foundation of coveting is one, being very materialistic minded, that's what occupies your mind and your thoughts and your strategies, and not recognizing that all of these material things are means to reach a spiritual end, not an end in themselves, like two things go together, and that God is the one who determines what is best for you to use for eternity, what you need to fulfill your part. Therefore, the antithesis of that is somebody who sells himself as a slave. He doesn't recognize his unique part. He sells himself as a slave to someone else. Instead of being God's slave, he's now a human being slave for the purpose of what? Of being able to have materialistic things, to have an easy materialistic life. Instead of being subservient to God and letting Him decide your mission, you're subservient yourself to a human being and let Him decide what you do. You become, instead of your material things becoming your tools in service of God, you become a tool in service of a human being. Not much the opposite. You become the tool. That's an edit. And you begin to say, I like this kind of life. This is what I love. Instead of loving God, you love your master. And that's representative of all material things. You become a slave to the material world, and you become a tool to the materialism, not the materialism becoming a tool to you. So that's why that represents this first prohibition, or this first parsha of Eved Ivri, represents the quintessence of what Lo Sachmod is, since it's coming to explain and enlarge and enhance that last prohibition in the ten utterances of not coveting. It started with the concept of a Jewish slave, which is in its essence the antithesis of not coveting. And that's why it says that the Ten Commandments, there's a I think the Nagon says it, but I think it's even a Medrash. The Medrash says that the Ten Commandments were written five on one tablet and five on the other tablet. And the five on the first tablet were more spiritual things. And the five on the second tablet were more this world things, between man and man. And the five on the first tablet between man and God. But they correspond one to one. The first one corresponds to the sixth, the second to the seventh, and so on. And the first four on both sides are very simple to see the correlation. Believe in God, don't murder. Perfect. Man is created in God's image. When you believe in God, you are increasing God's image in the world. When you murder human beings, you're decreasing God's image in the world by murdering a person who's created in God's image. By not murdering, you're increasing God's image. Here it's on the spiritual realm, here it's the physical. Secondly, don't commit adultery. And don't commit idolatry. The first one's idolatry, and the second five, adultery. Adultery is the physical counterpart of the spiritual idolatry. For the Jewish people to go after strange gods is like a woman, right, going after strange men who are not her husband. Adultery is the physical a counterpart of idolatry. Then there's not taking God's name in vain. That's the spiritual side to the physical sin of stealing. When you steal, how do you cover up? By swearing falsely. So the spiritual side is the swearing, and the physical sin is the stealing. Then there's keeping the Shabbos and not bearing false witness. What's the connection? Shabbos is a testimony that God created the world. When you keep Shabbos, you're testifying, I believe God's the creator, and he has the right to tell me not to use the creation if he so chooses. And Shabbos, God says, creation is off limits in certain ways, and that way you testify that God owns the world. Think about it. Your phone rings on Shabbos, and you don't answer it. What does that say? It's a statement. The phone's not mine. If it's mine, why can't I answer it? It's not mine. It's not the telephone companies. It's not, the Nokia or Orange. It belongs to God. And if God said, even though you pay your bills and they made the phone, you can't use it on Shabbos, then you can't use it. It's off limits. That means you believe that God can tell you what to do with the world he created. So Shabbos is a testimony that God created the world. And somebody who doesn't keep Shabbos is giving false testimony. That corresponds to the physical world of people who give false testimony. So the first four and the last four correspond beautifully. The fifth and the tenth don't seem to have any correlation. Honor your father and mother, don't covet. So there's a medrash that says an interesting connection, and that is that a person who covets somebody else's wife will end up committing adultery, having a child who will not know who his real father is. And he'll end up cursing his real father and honoring somebody who's not his father. So by coveting, you're going to end up not coming to honor of a parent properly because you're not know who the parents are. But I think there's another idea too, aside from that. And that is that based on these two concepts of what not coveting is based on. One, recognizing that God gives you your mission and your parameters and you have to function within that. Because the whole functioning is not for this world, it's as tools for the next world. And God's the one who determines what tools you need. And that's the second correlation, is that you understand that, then this world is not important because of the physical, material things themselves as an end, but only as a means. And then you don't waste your time, right, trying to figure out strategies how to get materialistic things. You're more concerned about love of God and making strategies how to use those physical things for the right purpose. And then the thing doesn't become the main focus of your life. The main focus of your life is, how can I use what God gave me to serve him and to create my world to come? Those are the two corollaries of the foundations of lo sachmod, of not coveting. An appreciation of the physical world as a means to reach the spiritual, and therefore an appreciation of what God gave you to be able to accomplish that. So there, think about it, the honoring of the parent has both aspects to it. First of all, it's your parent who's also a partner in giving you your physical, material parameters. Because they're the ones who, through genetics, make you what you are to a certain degree. Many of your talents come from them. They made you what you are. And if you're not happy being what you are, then you're not really honoring your parents. Because how could somebody honor his parent and not be happy with who they are and what they are, when your parent is the one who pretty much determined a lot of what you are? That's one idea. Beyond that, it's what's it called? Honoring a parent is also based on what's it called? That's the idea of Mesorah. The parents are your link to Mesorah, which is God's direction of the world. Mesorah means tradition. Our tradition goes back to Har Sinai, where God is the one who communicated to us what our mission, what our role is. Masorah is accepting God's edicts, God's direction as to what you're supposed to be doing in this world, what your mission is, what a Jew's mission, what your specific mission, man, woman, non-Jew, Jew, all of them are spoken to in the Torah. The Torah speaks to non-Jews too. It gives them their mitzvahs to do. And if they do them, they'll get a share in the world to come, says the Rambam. And they, what's it called? The Torah says that a non-Jew who even learns about his seven mitzvahs, right, will live with them in the eternally. It says, the Medrash says, V'chai bohem asher yasa osam ha'adam v'chai bohem, that a person will do and live with them. And the Targum says, l'olam haba, in the world to come, right? And the Medrash says on that, doesn't say a Kohen Levi Israel, it says a human being. Ha'adam replies even to Goyim, that even a non-Jew who keeps his seven mitzvahs and learns about them will live eternally in the world to come. So says the Medrash. So, what's it called? The Torah, by tradition, in other words, tradition means going back to what God gave, delineates everybody's mission in this world. What your part is, what somebody else's part is, and that's part of respecting your parents. Respect of a parent is based on respect for tradition, because the way you get the tradition is through the generation before, and they got it from the generation before them. And if you don't respect the previous generation, then you won't receive from them the tradition. You won't respect that either. So on the one hand, honoring a parent is based on respecting tradition, which means you respect the fact that God is the one who gives our roles and missions and directives. Secondly, that what's it called, that your parents are the ones who basically, to a certain degree, determine what your role is going to be, what your props are, what kind of person you are, whatever, what your physical attributes are, what your talents are. So in those two respects, there's a tremendous correlation between not coveting, which is based on believing that God is the one who apportions out roles, and through tradition, and also the fact that if you believe that what God gives you is what you need, then you'll respect your parents. But if you think that you'd rather be somebody else, then you won't respect your parents. There's a correlation. In addition, honoring a parent also is based on Hakaras HaTov, of being grateful for what your parents gave you. Now, it boils down to the fact that it's not just the physical, material benefits your parents gave you, because even if they gave you nothing, they abandoned you the day you were born, you still have to respect and honor them. Why? Because they gave you life. So, honoring a parent is a function of appreciation of life, which makes it understandable. What's the reward for honoring a parent? Long life. If you appreciate life, you get more of it. According to the first reason we said, if you appreciate your mission in this world and the props that God gave you to fulfill it, then He'll give you time to do it. But if you don't appreciate your mission and your props, then what do you need time on the stage? Then you get the cane and off the stage. You're not accomplishing what you're supposed to. But if you can accomplish what you're supposed to, then I'd rather be on the full time on stage. So again, it fits very nicely, right? The reward for honoring a parent, both from its aspect of the parents, a respect for tradition, and a respect for your unique part in the world, and parents are also a honor of life, an appreciation of life. For both of those things, you get longer life. If that's the case, when can you really appreciate life? Like we said, if life is only the seconds between you're born and you die, and how much material pleasure you can have, then when you're born, you begin to die. And no matter how much pleasure you have, it's very quickly gone. And there's nothing left of it. And not only that, but there's no second of life that's important intrinsically. Because how much pleasure can you have in a second? No. It's just an accumulation of time that makes life important, and of a standard of life, quality of life. Because if you're in the hospital in a coma, you can't take too much enjoyment either. So if life is only enjoying this world, it's an end in itself, life is very intrinsically unimportant and basically a long death. So when can you really appreciate life and appreciate your parents if you appreciate that life is a means to create eternity? Then every second of life is eternal. Then you really appreciate what life is. And then you can really honor your parents because you appreciate what they gave you. They didn't just give you 120 years, that's it. They gave you 120 years of every second an opportunity to create eternity. That's something special. So that's, therefore, there's a connection between Lo Sachmod, which comes to tell me, don't waste your time doting and thinking about how to get material things. Take what you have, what God gave you, and use it for eternity. Put your mind more on the goal than on the means. Use the means that God gave you to reach that goal. Don't make the means the goal. So both of those concepts, the idea of being more spiritually minded and looking at material things as a means to reach an end, is linked to honoring a parent, because honoring a parent depends on appreciating life. And it's also linked to understanding that God is the one who apportions out the roles and the means to reach them, and therefore don't covet what somebody else has, not your role. And therefore you'll appreciate your parents. They also gave you and made you what you are. And that's also tradition, that everything stems back from God's making the parameters, not you. So it all works together. So honoring the parents and not coveting, mamash go together. In addition, this is Parshas Shkalim. It says also, right before, that transgressing this prohibition of not coveting leads to all the other sins. That's why it's the last of the 10 utterances, because it causes all the others. If you covet, you can end up stealing, even murdering, adultery, swearing falsely, not believing in God because you think that you create your mission and you make the parameters and you can change your situation, if you will. And then you'll try to do it through idolatry, through all different kinds of means to get what you think you deserve, not what God deems you needing. So it leads to all the other prohibitions. And that's why many times Parsha Shkalim, which is the first of the four special haftorahs and maftirs, falls on Mishpatim. Because Shkalim is this concept. Every year, a person had to give a half a shekel towards the Beis HaMikdash, which they bought sacrifices from. It means my money, my material possessions, are only a half. I have my chelik, my portion. It's not somebody else's portion. Everybody has their unique portion. Nobody has it all. And therefore, my material possessions are what's going to make me fulfill my portion. And I give only a half. But what's the purpose of it? To give it to get closer to God. To buy sacrifices from it to bring you closer to God. It's both of those lessons. The lesson that everybody has their mission in this world. And the mission is not this world is an end, but this world is a means to reach an end. And therefore, it's not the physical things that are intrinsically important. It's what they can do. And God determines what will be better off for you in the world to come by giving you those things that uniquely are your portion to be able to create that. So if you don't have it, maybe you don't need it. That's not what's going to, again, if you look at the material thing as an end in itself, why shouldn't I have it? But if you look at it as a means to reach an end, and what's best for you in creating the world to come is not to have that tool, you don't need that tool. It's not your part. Then you won't make it a nicker in your life. You won't make it the thing that devours you. So Parshas Shkalim represents the same thing. You take money, you contribute it, basically to bring yourself closer to God through sacrifices. Everybody donates, and everybody only has a part. No two people are the same. And therefore, be happy with your part. Don't covet somebody else's part. It wasn't meant for you. It all fits together.